you guys.
Yep.
It's Sunday.
Yeah, we went out last night.
Yeah, we're kind of sleepy.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
Yeah, we had a good time.
Yeah, we gotta go out tomorrow night too.
Yeah. My poor liver is already going, no, what are you doing to me, lady?
I got the new Pliskin shirt on.
Yeah, that's the bigger one.
The bigger one, yeah. It's bigger. It'll be better on some of the larger shirts. I like them both, the big one and the little one. The small one's kind of cool, too.
Big one and little.
Depends on how big you are and how big the shirt is, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't put the big one, like, on a baby shirt.
Yeah.
We never did make any baby shirts.
Uh-uh. Nobody's asked for them.
It didn't even occur to me until just now.
They're out there. Put it on a dog.
Put it on a dog.
Yeah.
We thought about, I did think about making Pookie a 13 o'clock little sweater or shirt or something.
Yeah.
She wouldn't if she wouldn't wear it.
So we got Badger in there. My boy Louie's there. Deborah. Esther's in there. Esther's in there. Yeah. I called her Esther.
Like MC Deborah. Esther.
Yeah.
That's enough.
All right. Yeah, we watched, we watched some movies the other day, Sinbad movies. Tila, one of our listeners, brought up Sinbad. Her uncle was telling her that if you really want to see good movies, you got to see the Sinbad movies. And I forgot all about those things. We saw them kind of about 5 years ago, some of them.
Yeah.
And you know, they're Ray Harryhausen. He did special effects on them. And the last two are British. I don't think the first one was British. Everybody sounded American in it.
Yeah, well, there was kind of a large gap between, I mean, the first one, which was Seventh Voyage of Sinbad, they came out in 1958.
Yeah.
And then the second one, Golden Voyage of Sinbad, didn't come out until 1973.
Yeah, and I saw Golden Voyage of Sinbad and Sinbad and the Eye of the Tiger.
Yeah, we were going to watch all three of them, but we didn't have time. Yeah. So we'll probably watch Eye of the Tiger tonight and talk about that tomorrow.
What I was saying is I saw them both in the theater. My babysitter took me to see them when I was a little kid.
The famous Kimmy.
The famous Kimmy. That's my first girlfriend. She's probably about 13, 14. There wasn't nothing going on.
I know, I'm just kidding.
I was just in love with that girl. She ran off with a teenage dude that had a car. That was something else. I was standing out there, jaw dropping. Fucking, she got into the car with him and they rode off. And fucking Mike, my buddy Mike, who was like a couple years older than me, he's like, "You stole your girlfriend, man." And Jimmy goes, "It's because he's got a car." That was fucking funny.
It's hard to look cool putting a 13-year-old girl in the back of your big wheel.
Yeah. She wasn't 13 by the time that happened, though. I think she was about 15 or 16 by the time that happened. That was probably about 8 or 9. That's probably about 9 or something. Maybe it's hard to tell. Maybe I might have been 10, you know. But that was fucking funny looking back on that shit. But anyway, these movies here were, they're good. They're real good. They were kind of like Star Wars before Star Wars. They had this, we're going to take you on a journey kind of tone to them. And they did. They even the 1958 one kind of did take you into another world. Now, it's dated. But it's not that dated. It was ahead of, you know, for 58, it does real well.
It looks amazing.
It looks real good.
You know, the set design's beautiful. Obviously, Ray Harryhausen is a fucking legend.
Yeah.
And all the monsters and stuff he comes up with in this one, like the Cobra Lady and the fucking Cyclops and the Dragon and all this stuff, it looks so fucking cool. And honestly, like Sinbad fighting the skeleton
in this,
that was probably the most popular sequence. And that's kind of what inspired him to do, like, you know, in Jason and Argonauts, where he was like fighting all the skeletons because everybody just thought that was so cool looking.
Yeah. The first one is very much kind of like Jason and the Argonauts. Jason and the Argonauts. And the Sinbad movies, there's some crossover there. It's the same kind of movie. There's something about these movies that they kind of remind me of the Haunted House at Disneyland. They're just scary enough to make them fun for a kid.
Yeah.
They don't overwhelm a kid. But then for an adult, they are very fantasy. And there was sexual undertones in everything that adults could appreciate. Kids could appreciate it. Like, it was just hot women. In like I Dream of Jeannie outfits. And the second one had
Caroline Monroe.
And if you know anything about Caroline Monroe, she had to be in these fucking.
Yeah, they had to put her in the top that like pushed the boobs together like that.
Yeah, she's just breastified. In that shit, man. She was cute, man. Real cute. Kind of a real tan, dark-skinned kind of British girl. I don't know if she was Italian or part Italian or something.
I thought we established that she was part. Somebody said
that she might have been part Italian.
Yeah, I think she was.
Yeah, she was just super cute. And they just knew what they were doing with the movie.
Well, it's just a fun, like, epic adventure fantasy movie.
With romance, and there's the
swashbuckling and monsters.
And there's cool. Everything's gendered, you know, it's very boy girl, you know, which is, that was cool. That's what you wanted in a movie like this, you know. Very kind of adventure. And you can see how much Indiana Jones was ripping off of these movies too when you watch it. You go like, that's where Lucas and Spielberg were coming up with a lot of these ideas for Star Wars and a lot of these ideas for Indiana Jones, you know, with the traps and, you know, it's just cool. Real cool.
Well, a lot of that, too, is like from serials like from the 30s and stuff.
Yeah. But I really think Indiana Jones also looked, you know, the guys working on that, of course, looked at these movies. Might have had a lot of the same people working on them.
Probably they did. I think all of the movies, as far as I know, like I said, we're going to watch Eye of the Tiger because I think that was the first one I saw. That came out in 77. And I'm pretty sure I saw that at the drive-in. But I think these first two were shot in Spain, but they were done. It was Columbia Pictures though.
Yeah.
Like all of them were
now,
Columbia Pictures.
Now T just joined in. We mentioned T earlier that, you know, her uncle was wanting her to watch these and that kind of reminded us. And I said, man, I'm going to see him again, but she's in there. She just chimed in. She goes, they got hot men in them too. So I guess she just saw them.
Woman's
got to fucking call and give a shout out to the hot men that are in this. I totally understand they're very gendered stories, swashbuckling handsome men, and they got ugly men too, but even the fucking Tom Baker knocks it out of the park, and
he's in the Golden Boy, just in he plays the bad guy
and he's just like, oh man, he did a fucking fantastic job as Kura.
Yeah,
I wouldn't really call Tom Baker a good-looking guy, but he's for some reason very good-looking and compelling in this as a fucking villain.
It's really funny because, you know, obviously you think of him as Doctor Who, but it's like he makes a really, really good bad guy.
I think it's a better bad guy than a Doctor Who almost. You're like, yeah. Maybe I think it was kind of a situation where maybe he didn't want to play too many bad guys because it'd be easy for him to get typecast as a bad guy, like Arnold. Arnold is much better as a villain.
Yeah.
Much better.
He just didn't want to play villains.
He knew that. That's why he didn't want to be a villain, because that's the route he would have gone.
Yeah.
And you can't carry a movie as a villain.
Yeah.
Your career goes away.
You always get defeated.
Yeah.
Well, and like, yeah, you get typecast into like playing that. But yeah, so, well, the interesting thing about the first one, like you said, it's weird because the first one, which came out in the 50s, you know, I think the first Ray Harryhausen that I saw that I was aware that it was Ray Harryhausen was, I mean, I'm pretty sure I saw Eye of the Tiger in the drive-in when I was like 5 or 6 years old, but I wouldn't have been aware that was, you know, the guy doing the special effects or whatever. But when I saw Clash of the Titans in 1981, with just those fucking guys, I love that fucking Medusa, you know, thing and like the fucking scorpions and, you know, the little mechanical owl and all that kind of stuff. That was so fucking cool. And I think that was kind of my first movie that I knew that it was Ray Harryhausen. So I went out like looking for other movies he had made. Because obviously he made a bunch of monster movies like in the 50s, like 20 Million Miles to Earth and all that kind of stuff, where he made like dinosaurs and whatnot.
Now T says these movies had us cracking up, but they're truly good. And to create these movies must have taken forever.
Oh yeah.
And Mango said they took about 3 years to make. They had really good costumes. And Badger says, don't get me started on Carolyn Monroe. Yeah, no, she was fucking, she was like a notable, even at like the age of 7 or 8 when I was first seeing her, I was like, God, she's hot. She was real easily. And then Fourth Row Down says, Tom Baker always plays a great lunatic. And he did... I need to check him out playing Rasputin.
Oh, yeah.
He probably did a really good
Rasputin. Think I ever saw
that. Yeah.
Yeah, Louis said, the first time I saw Caroline Monroe was in Captain Kronos Vampire Hunter. Yeah, I think I saw her in, she was in Star Crash. She was in one of the Bond movies, too, wasn't she? I kind of feel like. I'm pretty sure she was
I think she was
movies.
A Bond girl.
Yeah.
But if you liked these movies, you also want to see Jason and the Argonauts movie. I think there's a couple of those, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, well,
Jason
him,
and the Argonauts, that, which like, is a Greek version of this.
Yeah, like him fighting those skeletons, that's yeah. still like one of the best and then like, he fight, stop motion animation
And he
sequences.
Fights Talos, the giant fucking stone, of giant, was a bronze statue.
Yeah.
They're kind of old, but they were good. And then you want to see Clash of the Titans, the old one.
That was yeah, from 81. Rare.
Yeah, 81.
Man, I saw Clash of the Titans so many times. I think I have that shit memorized at this point. And yeah, the Kraken looked fucking great, too.
Now, for T, if you want to see an old Greek-type movie that has hot guys in it, you want to see the ones that had fucking, what was Steve Reeves in it?
All the Hercules movies.
All the Hercules movies with Steve Reeves. They were good. They were kind of like Clash of the Titans and Jason the Argonauts. They were about like that level. They were older, though. They're kind of Hollywood-ish, you know? I think it was 50s, right? 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
But Steve Reeves was kind of like the very first Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, he was a big dude, bodybuilder. He was not natural, but he wasn't as roided out as like somebody from the 1970s. They were messing around with some prototype anabolic steroids at that time, but Reeves fucking looked great. He was, and everybody liked him. He was evidently like a real good guy.
Yeah, there was a ton of Hercules movies. Steve Reeves was, there was a series with Steve Reeves, and then there was a couple of, there was some Italian ones like with some other actors. I think there was one with Mickey Hargitay as well.
Steve Reeves had that leading man Ken doll look, but he was fucking buffed out. And they weren't afraid to show his upper body. I mean, you know, fucking, he wasn't, you're not talking about like Charlton Heston. Charlton Heston all bark and no bite. This motherfucker had some bite. He could whip your ass. He's in good shape.
Yeah, Esther said MST3K did a bunch of the Hercules movies. Yeah, they did Hercules Against the Moon Men.
Yeah.
Shit, man. They did like five or six of them, that's what I think.
Yeah.
I remember the Moon Men one.
Now, I haven't seen Eye of the Tiger in a long time. We're going to see that tonight.
Yeah.
I remember Eye of the Tiger being the best out of them all in terms of scope and just quality.
I have to say, like, the first one, I love the first one because I love... the funny shit about his little girlfriend getting shrunk down and him carrying her around like in a little pepper shaker thing.
Yeah.
Like it's like a little house that he makes for her.
And she goes down into the lamp to talk to the genie.
To the genie.
I will try, master. I will try. That's cool. They got to put a candy in there.
I love it. Yeah. At least that kid wasn't as annoying.
No, he wasn't annoying.
But the funny thing about it is that one of my favorite things about that movie is that there is this vague prophecy about freeing the genie. And, you know, the princess, Parisa, her name is, right? Like, after she gets, like, embiggened, like, back to her normal size. Yeah.
That ought to be like a, that would be like a fetish fucking thing. The embiggination of some chick, you know, and she gets bigger. Never mind. Went off on that.
Well, see, now I lost my train of thought because you, like, just keep interrupting.
I know.
But, yeah, so she gets back embiggened, and there was kind of a thing about freeing the genie.
Yeah.
And it was really vague, but she was like, oh, I think the prophecy means that I have to throw the lamp into this lava.
Yeah, how'd they get that?
And then I was like, well, you better hope that frees the genie, otherwise you burn that little kid alive inside. And you'd be like, no, that's not what it meant.
It worked, though.
But it worked. Well, yeah, that would have been a really, really different ending.
It shows up back on Sinbad, Persian ship. And he goes, oh, by the way, I brought all the treasure. I'm like, oh, he brought the treasure. It's a happy ending. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. He's like, woo, we have a new cabin boy and we're rich as shit.
Yeah.
Woohoo.
Well, I guess Sinbad doesn't really give a shit. He's already rich as a motherfucker when he starts all these voyages with Lord Sinbad.
That's true.
You know, or Prince Sinbad.
He's just like, oh, he's already more got treasure.
Money. Oh, yeah, more money.
Yeah. But, you know, this one, I think watching the first one, like I said, it has so much cool shit in it. I love the Cyclops. I love the Cobra Lady, you know, that the magician does. It's just like there's just fucking great shit in it. And, you know, in the skeleton fight, it's just him versus one skeleton. But in this, there's a dragon, too, isn't there?
Yeah.
There's a fire-breathing dragon.
Yeah, they were using it as a guard dog.
Yeah.
They were using it as a gate.
Yeah, it's
basically
like
a gate. And me and Jenny were like, where's this thing shitting?
Yeah, it's like you'd think there'd be a massive pile of
shit right,
like,
there,
right
yeah.
behind, because he couldn't go very far. Right. He was on like a little choke chain. Yeah.
So you have to clean out the dragon shit every day. And then imagine what you had to feed.
It's like the litter box.
Maybe it was just
the dragon litter box.
Yeah, maybe it was
go scoop it.
Maybe it was just totally a magical creature. It didn't eat or shit. It was just something conjured.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
Might have not been alive. I don't know, you know.
That's what, well, maybe, just because, you know, like in the second one, Golden Boy of Sinbad, where Tom Baker, like the wizard, he had those little homunculus things, like those little flying, and they were just like magic. He made them out of like potpourri or whatever that was.
Yeah, potpourri. He caught them and they turned into leaves.
That's great, man. It looked like potpourri. But he just made them out of that, so I guess they were just made. So maybe the dragon's just like a magical creature too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It doesn't have to eat or poop or anything.
The first one was good. But it was very dated compared to the second one. By the time the 70s rolled around, they had perfected that look. It seems like the film stock was better quality. The color processes were brighter. The costumes were a lot better. The scope of the movies was a lot bigger. You kind of were more likely to buy the locations. You could tell it was matte paintings and stuff, but... It was okay, though. You know, the practical effects, it worked. It has a charm to it. You could kind of suspend your disbelief and go, yeah, those big statues do exist, you know, up in those mountains. And a lot of good effects and a lot of good ideas. They actually showed, you know, Tom Baker as the damn evil sorcerer. What was his name again?
Kura.
Yeah, they show Kura. And he's showing his buddy, watch this. And he makes it, and it comes to life, a little homunculus, little bat creature, like a man with bat wings. I got a little gargoyle is what it looks like.
And he flies around and he can like spy on people.
And he's like threatening it with scissors and shit. Like, look at it. I control it. And then he makes friends with it. And then it goes out. It's basically his fucking drone. He can see through its eyes and hear through its ears, and he can control shit. He can do all this sorcery. It makes him older, though, as he does it. He loses his life.
I really like that aspect of it, because it seems like in the first one, like, you had a wizard in the first one too that was trying to get the lamp back from the from the Cyclops, because the Cyclops was like, oh, you dropped this, I'm having it, bye. And you know what I mean? And then he took it in his cave. So the wizard that was trying to, and then he like went, here's another thing about the first one though, because the wizard shrinks the princess, right? Like in the middle of the night. And then no one seems, is it me or does no one like twig to the fact that obviously the one magical dude is the one that has done that? Because they all kind of go to him and be like, you're the only one that can reverse the spell. And he does end up reversing the spell, but they have to go like get the eggshell from the rock and all that. It's not the rock, like that person, but like, you know, the big mythical bird with two heads.
Yeah.
But I was going to say, in Golden Voyage of Sinbad, I think my favorite sequence in that is when Sinbad fights Kali, the statue, like with all the swords.
I
was like watching something that kind of showed how they did that, and basically they had to, so John Philip Law, who played Sinbad in the second one, who was also Pygar in Barbarella, and he was in Danger Diabolique, which was the last MST that was on the Sci-Fi Channel. So, you know, you might want to go check that out. But he's a good-looking dude. So I liked him as Sinbad, actually, because he has, like, those real intense, like, looking eyes. I don't know. There was something about him that I thought was really kind of embodied that character. But he had to sword fight two or three guys with swords that were kind of, like, roped together. You know what I mean? Like, and then... Obviously, Ray Harryhausen had to animate Kali, who had, what, like, six arms? Yeah. So he had to remember, like, what the film was, like, what the fucking sequence was, where the swords were going, and every single arm had to be moved, like, individual. I think it took, like, 3 weeks of, like, constant work to do it.
Yeah, well, this statue had six arms. It's like Kali. I think Kali, for real, only had four arms.
I've seen, there's different versions.
There's versions of it?
There's different versions.
It looked like Kali. And and it was being worshipped by all these little mini Hulks. Little green men.
That's right, because I call them the skinny Hulks.
Yeah, and they're walking around.
Because they're all green.
they're walking around doing ape walks, like they're monkeys and shit. They're so primitive that they walk like a monkey, you know? Which
and they're great
he kind of mentioned that in the comments. She's talking about it right now. She didn't really like the movies, but there's definitely like this overarching theme of real dramatic deaths and over the top kind of And then they said it didn't pull any punches, not at all. Those movies leaned into what they were. They knew what they were. It was fantasy theater. They're putting on theatrical death. You know, deaths and stuff. That's what it is, you know, magic. And it was they were not trying to give you a believable version of realism. That's not what they were trying to deliver. This was a show.
Well, even
mythic tales.
I even saw a clip of a interview with Ray Harryhausen, and he said almost that exact same thing. He's just kind of like, you know, you want it to look like it's a real creature, but it's like, this is a fantasy film. Yeah. So you want to give it that fantasy element. You don't necessarily want it to look entirely realistic because, you know, it's kind of like this other world that you're creating.
Yeah. Well, that's why I kind of was comparing the movies to kind of like the Haunted House at Disney World or Disneyland.
Yeah.
It's trying to be scary, but it's not realistic, and it's kind of funny at the same time. But it does have a dark tone to it. You know what I mean? You're enjoying the whole thing. And that's kind of what it is. They had elements of that and Indiana Jones at the same time, that kind of tone. I really liked in the second one, you know, where Sinbad is hooked up with the Vizier, and the Vizier has this damn copper helmet on, so you can't see his face because he got burned up. And he's been trying to figure out where this island is, and he's got the pieces, and there's a painting on the wall, and then they hold up the shadow, and they go, oh, yeah, there it is. And it was giving them kind of a location.
Yeah.
And that was like right out of Indiana Jones with like...
the Well of Souls.
The Well of Souls, yeah. You know, where they were looking for the Temple of Ra or whatever, you know. It was kind of like that, you know. It was just like, yeah, I can remember it as a kid. I remember my reaction to it as a kid in the theater. I was like, oh, wow, that's awesome. You know? Wow, how'd they think of that? It's real simple now.
Yeah.
But in those days, there was a lot of nuance to that, you know. It was like, wow, that's a good idea. Shadows and making a map and on the wall and it all lines up. And wow, mind blown. Wow, yeah. Like in another time. That's my high-tech retro futuristic technologies that they had, which they have that in Eye of the Tiger too. You know, they're using mixing machine and magic together to make, you know, metallic minotaur robots, you know.
I'm looking forward to seeing that one because I think we watched the 1958 one a few years ago.
Yeah,
because I remembered, like, you know, the little bitty princess in the little thing, and I was sitting there thinking, you'd think, because at one point when they were fighting, I think when they were on the island, like fighting the two-headed bird or whatever, I'm pretty sure that Sinbad had his little girlfriend in her little, you know, her little pepper shaker.
In the pepper shaker.
And and he's like just tucked into the pants. And then he was like running around and fighting and stuff. And I'm like, man, she's probably like bouncing all over that shit. And they're going to be like, knock it off. God damn it.
And then in that scene, this is awesome because these movies were kind of for kids and young adults, really was the target. While all this is going on, they got some poor dude lashed to a spit and the damn Cyclops was roasting him alive on a damn spit. It was awesome.
He's like, cool. I smell delicious.
Yeah, Sinbad eventually gets him off of there.
Although it takes longer than it probably should.
Yeah, that would have killed a man. Must have had him on ultra low.
I guess. He's like, yeah, I'm slow cooking this shit. But, get all this tender meat falling off the bone. I actually, like, the more I watched it, the more I felt bad for the Cyclops. Because the Cyclops, look, dude, yeah, he's a monster and stuff, but he was just, like, on an island.
Yeah.
The wizard came and like was kind of fucking with him. The wizard, I will note, dropped the lamp, right?
Yeah.
And then the Cyclops just went and be like, ooh, finders keepers. Yeah. You know what I mean? And he took it, and then the wizard was just being an ass, and he's like, well, I have to go back to the island to get my lamp back. And, you know, the Cyclops, he's just a monster. He doesn't know. And then like when they go back and they fight him, and then they fucking poked his eye out, and then Sinbad was like, hey, Cyclops, and then made him fall off a fucking cliff.
They didn't poke it out. They burned it.
That's not cool.
They burned it with the torch. And he's going,
I've only got one of those. God damn
all
you.
Dramatic and everything.
I'd be dramatic too if somebody burned out my one eyeball.
Yeah, he got killed because he ran off the cliff. The only thing I didn't really like about that is that evidently there were more of them on the island and they showed another one, but you could obviously tell it was the exact same model. At least they could have made the hair color different.
I think eventually, because Ray Harryhausen actually helped writing these films, you know what I mean? Like him and another guy, like they co-wrote them. And his, you know, using his Dynamation, which is what they called his stop motion thing. And I think initially there was supposed to be two Cyclops fighting each other, I think was supposed to be the climax. But for whatever reason, they decided, fuck it, we're going to do a dragon instead. Yeah. And I think the dragon they used for this was actually repurposed from one of his older movies. Like, not, it wasn't exactly the same, but I think he reused, like, some of the armatures and stuff. I also heard that the Cobra Woman from, you know, the magic show that the wizard does, I think that they repurposed that armature for Medusa in Clash of the Titans, but I'm not entirely sure if that's true or not.
Yeah, Esther says, the men were men in those movies. I love the fantasy aspects of the Sinbad movies. Jason the Argonauts, too. Yeah, like I'd mentioned it before, the scripts were very, what you would call today, gendered. They were very traditional gender roles, which goes along great with a mythic fantasy tale. You see, the men were acting like men with male, with all the frailties of being a man. Like, some of them were drunks. Remember that? And fucking, they fell prey to the damn poisonous river because it tasted like wine. And some, like, of them were
going to drink all this.
Some of them got fucking pissed off and desperate and tried to kill Sinbad because they hadn't eaten in a long time.
They also killed the rock baby.
Yeah, to kill the rock baby. They also tried to steal the treasure. So, yeah, they were all acting like men.
They were kind
not all necessarily good men.
They were like a bunch of yahoos.
Yeah, a bunch of yahoos. And then Sinbad runs into basically a tavern owner who's trying to get rid of his worthless fucking musician's son. He goes, please, I'll pay you to take him on a voyage. Give this motherfucker some battle experience. Get him out of here. I'll even give you this beautiful slave girl. You can have her. You know, and that's where Carolyn Monroe came from. Well, he freed her, you know what I mean? So it was Sinbad being a good dude. No, I don't believe in that shit. You're free, you know. You can sleep in my cabin, but we don't have to do nothing, you know. That kind
Well, he had had a dream about her.
He had a dream about her because she had
because these, she had that yeah, eye on yeah, her she hand. Had an eye on there. So she was, like, significant to
Yeah, she had part of a, she was part of, like, an oracle thing, you know. Oh, when they talked to the oracle, the damn devil that came out of the well.
Oh, I liked that, too.
It scared me when I was a kid.
Oh, the makeup and that. I love that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he's all, like, kind of green and purple, yeah. And he's got, like, big horns and shit.
And then during the fighting, even, they got Carolyn Monroe in there. She's really the only woman in the movie. It would just have been a sausage fest without her. All right, so you have to have a woman in the damn movie. I think there were women as bad guys every now and then, but there wasn't any good guy women. But also one scene, like, they're being attacked by all these damn monsters, and the vizier, who's, you know, doesn't have a face, he's actually protecting Carolyn Monroe. Did you notice that?
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, and he's like in this dramatic pose, like, you have to kill me to get to her. Which is, that's all, you know, great traditional values of, you know, courage and bravery and self-sacrifice and helping women. And they also, I liked how they did it in an Eastern tone. These are Persian tales. I think they're actually pre-Islamic. I'd have to check, but I was under the impression that Sinbad goes back before Islam. But in the movies, Sinbad is Muslim. So they use a lot of references to Allah, and they never really talk about Islam per se, but
he says stuff like trust in Allah, tie up your camel.
Right, but tie up your camel and stuff. So that's good that they added that in there. You know, they kind of had, I guess you would call it Abrahamic religions, their versions of honor and morality, which that is true. You know, most of the Abrahamic cultures do have tales that are like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, so these types of, like, epic adventure tales pretty much span the globe. It's just kind of, like, different cultural differences. I was going to say, you know what's interesting, though? The one, so the Golden Voyage, which was made in 1973, the one with Carolyn Monroe in it, it was almost kind of like, because I don't remember her being, because like you said, I think she was more like a damsel in distress type of character.
Yeah.
But in the first one, the 1958 one, Parissa did a bunch of shit, like, to help. And after she got shrunk down, like, she didn't even bitch about being shrunk down. She was just like, oh, bummer. And then he just put her in a little box and carried her around, and she was all, like, chipper and everything. But she got them out of the cage. Like, she climbed out of the cage because she was little and, like, pushed the thing out of the lock. And she went into the genie bottle or the genie lamp and, you know, made a bargain with him, like, and said, hey, we'll free you if you help us do this, if you give us the words, like, to call you and shit like that. So she was a lot more proactive in the 1958 one, now that I'm thinking about it.
There's another good Carolyn Monroe movie that's British that's kind of like this. It's called Journey to the Center of the Earth.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she plays the subterranean woman that they found down there. It's pretty good. And you find all these people that are being controlled by these damn psychic pterodactyls. That's the best way to describe it. It's got Peter Cushing in it. It's all steampunk.
What's that, Doug McClure?
Yeah, it's all steampunk.
I love that movie.
They use a damn drill ship. It's like a train with tractor treads on it and a big old drill.
And a big drill on the front.
Yeah, and it's back in the 1800s and it's all steam powered and they go down underneath the magma and everything. It's pretty cool.
I
saw that one in theater and it was good too.
I do like the psychic pterodactyl.
Yeah.
It's not
as nice as these.
No.
But it is fun. It's fun.
I think they did that on the new MST, like MST, yeah. The Return, the Netflix one. I'm pretty sure they did Journey to the Center of the Earth on that one. Because I think that's because I saw it recently and I think that's when I saw it.
I don't remember if Land of Time Forgot. I don't think that had Carolyn Monroe in it, did it? Some of you guys might know. There was cuties in it. There was British cuties in it, but I don't think it had Carolyn Monroe.
Yeah. But yeah, it's just, I mean, all these are so fun. And like I said, you really just can't beat fucking really good stop motion animation just because you can see how it's so labor intensive and you really have to be, you have to admire like the fucking work and effort that goes into it. I mean, Ray Harryhausen, I think when he was a kid and he saw King Kong, you know, in 1933 or whatever.
It was called At Earth's Core.
Oh, okay, yeah.
That's
yeah,
what
yeah.
it was. It wasn't That's Journey right. to the Center of the Earth.
Yeah, that
it was called At Earth's Core.
Yeah.
Or maybe is that two separate movies? I thought there was a Journey to the Center of the Earth.
There is, but I might have been...
The one with the pterodactyls, the ones I was thinking of that had Carolyn Monroe, I think it was called At Earth's Core. I think maybe. Been a long time.
Mega said that was made by Amicus. I didn't know that. They're the ones that made all the horror anthologies. They were like the other British studio. Like it was Hammer who made all the gothic stuff, and then Amicus mostly made, anthologies.
That's not good. All
that they made, but...
They also, there was the other one that had the damn U-boat. What did I call it? The Land That Time Forgot. And somebody said you got to watch The People That Time Forgot. It's like the sequel.
Ooh, I don't think I've ever seen that.
We haven't seen that one.
I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it. Yeah, we just watched the one with the submarine not too long ago.
Yeah, that one was actually good.
Yeah, I quite liked it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Ray Harryhausen, like I said, he saw King Kong when he was a kid, and obviously the original King Kong from 1933 that was also stop motion animation. And he was just so taken with it that he's like, I'm going to learn how to do that. And I mean, the shit today, it's still like fucking brilliant looking. Like you said, it doesn't look, you know, realistic, but it has its own thing to it. It has its own like charm to it.
Yeah.
And it's just, I mean, there's still, I saw like I was watching a bunch of other YouTube, reviews of it. And there was this one kid who was probably like in his 20s. And he was just going on and on and on about like all the Sinbad movies and Ray Harryhausen. And it's just like, he was really, really knowledgeable about it. I'm like, see, it doesn't have to, you know, it's not just because we're old or whatever. It just seems like, because even like younger people can appreciate the fucking artistry that goes into, because like I said, how fucking long that takes.
It was, I would call this classic British cinema, okay?
Yeah.
It's very theatrical, all right? Great sets, good acting, interesting scripts. The idea was to really entertain the audience. It was to give the audience what they wanted, take them on a journey. It was just, and it was, everything was classic. Everything was epic. It had an epic tone to it. They knew what they were doing. They knew exactly. And they were very, very tight edits. Very tight. They didn't waste time. Although, if they wasted time, they wasted time on a scene that showed you something.
Yeah.
Like when Tom Baker forms that homunculus.
Yeah.
And then interacts with it. And really kind of a waste of time. They didn't do anything for the story. But you love that scene.
Well, yeah.
Because you're being drawn into it. As a kid, I was totally mystified by the little gargoyle creature. You know, and its reaction, like to being prodded with scissors and shit.
Like, hey,
leave me alone. Then he makes fun. Then he makes friends with it and sends it out the window and shit.
Sorry, I poked it. Yeah, now you have to do my bidding.
Well, he was an evil sorcerer. You know what I mean? I run you. I made you. You know, then
Oh my god.
Yeah, and then he animates the damn wooden statue of the woman on the front of the damn ship, and it gets in the boat and starts fighting. How are you going to fight that? It's just a big old piece of wood.
See, that's what I was like, when we watched the first one and like Sinbad was fighting the skeleton, I'm like, why even bother like trying to sword fight with a skeleton? Because like, it's, you can't stab them.
Yeah, you have to smash that.
You just have to like, he ran it off a thing and then that's like all you can do. It just seems pointless like sword fighting it.
I'm looking forward to see Eye of the Tiger.
Yeah,
I haven't
seen
it in a long time. Mego Badger said he thought it was the weakest one because he didn't think the acting or the story wasn't quite as good. I remember the visuals being really good, though. I remembered it looking better than the second one.
Well, we'll see.
Than the Golden Voyage.
I mean, all of these are amazing looking. All the costumes are amazing looking. The monsters are cool. You know, they're just cool, like, epic stories. And like you said, they don't really, like, fuck around. It's always kind of like, even like the 1958 one, you know, they're on the boat. They're on Colossa. There's a Cyclops, like, within, like, the first fucking 5 minutes, I think.
Yeah. They show you something right off the bat.
Yeah, and then it's just going on and on, and it's like there's always like something cool to look at. Yeah.
Namego says there's some semi-nudity in the second one, too.
So he said, in the third one?
Yeah, in the third one.
Oh,
yeah. Who did he say it was?
Now Tom's getting all excited. Yeah, because these aren't, you know, they call them like a loose trilogy, and they actually do, I think they sell them as a box set, but they're not like...
They're standalones.
They're standalone movies. You don't have to like watch them in order or anything. Yep. And they all have different directors and they all have different actors playing Sinbad and playing all the other roles. Yep. They're just kind of like, you know, because it's Sinbad was just like a character and he was in like a whole bunch of different, you know, stories like going back centuries. And so they're just adapting those. Like I said, it's kind of like Greek mythology. But
yeah. Now, if you like these movies, for me, these movies kind of set the tone and the baseline for Sinbad. If you like these, you probably won't like any other Sinbad movie, especially not from the time. Because the other ones were Russian ripoffs that didn't have anything to do with Sinbad.
Yeah.
Just re-edited as a Sinbad, and that's not Sinbad. That motherfucker's a Russian. You can tell. Blonde-haired, blue-eyed, Scandinavian Sinbad.
Yeah. You
know what I mean? Wearing Russian traditional clothing or fucking Iceland or Finnish clothing and stuff. You're like, where the hell are we? Why is it snowing? You know?
Yeah. It's like, how is this Sinbad?
Yeah.
This isn't Persia.
Yeah. Why are ice goddesses fucking appearing out of nowhere? You know?
Well, yeah, that's why. And the funny thing is that, cause Mystery Science Theater did one, I can't remember what season it was. It was one of the, maybe season 4 or 5. And I think it was The Magic Voyage of Sinbad. Yeah. And it was obviously, like I said, it obviously didn't start out as a Sinbad movie. It started out as a Russo-Finnish, you know, folklore story that was just acquired by some, you know, American or British production company and said, hey, we're going to make this into a Sinbad movie, even though it's clearly not. I mean, it's a sailor and he goes on adventures and there's like monsters. Like, actually, I think Magic Voyage of Sinbad has that really cool blue bird of happiness like thing, which is like it's like a big blue bird with like a woman's head, and it's actually pretty cool looking.
Yeah.
But it's like, so it has like some similarities to Sinbad stories, but it's really not.
I don't know of any other Sinbad stories.
It's like the whitest ass fucking Sinbad you've ever seen.
If you like these if you like these, you also like the Jason and the Argonauts that had Ray Harryhausen in them. You'd like that Clash of the Titans from the early 80s.
Yeah, man, I love
you would like At Earth's Core. You'd like Land of Time Forgot. Probably The People of Time Forgot. I haven't seen that one, but Land of Time Forgot kind of reminded me of this also.
Strawdog78 said, didn't Lou Ferrigno do a Sinbad movie?
No, he did it. I don't. Was it Sinbad? No, I thought he did Hercules.
He might have done Hercules, but he might have done something a Sinbad like too. I don't know.
I have to look back into it.
Interesting.
They would have had to have dubbed him. Because he, you know, he sounds deaf.
Yeah.
The only time his actual voice worked was in that episode of Star Trek Continues where he played that Orion. Orion slave master that came back for that slave girl.
Yeah.
And he just, because he sounds like he's an alien talking. And it worked real well.
Yeah.
And he can act. A lot of people don't realize it. Lou Ferrigno can act. It's just that he has that slight speech impediment that deaf people have.
Yeah.
But he put on a great show. And he's fucking big. He's bigger than Arnold. He's only a couple years younger than Arnold, but he looks a lot younger.
Yeah.
You see him. Yeah. He's in a lot better condition.
It's a, well, I was going to say, since we're talking about voices, I found it very interesting that in the first Sinbad movie from 1958, everybody sounded like Americans, right?
Yeah.
Because like I said, it was Columbia Pictures. And then in the second one, Golden Voyage of Sinbad, they actually got, like, John Philip Law decided he was going to do a Middle Eastern accent, which I guess the director was, like, not too jazzed about, but he's just like, whatever, you do you, man. And, which, you know, it's fine. I said at least they tried to make it seem like Middle Eastern, like where it was, instead of just everybody talking like they were from Dubuque or something. But, you know, and Tom Baker does an accent like that, too. But it's, I think it's more successful when he does it. But
then Esther didn't know that Lou Ferrigno's deaf. Yeah, he's deaf.
Yeah.
He can talk, though. He can read lips. I think he can hear a little bit. But
yeah, I didn't think he was completely deaf.
I don't think he's totally deaf, but he does have that, you know, my cousin's deaf. He can't talk at all. And then I've known other people that were deaf. They can do pretty well, but they, you know, they don't quite enunciate things the right way. They
yeah, because they never
they can't
heard.
Hear it. They can't hear what they're saying.
They don't, and they can't hear what they
They
sound
can't
like.
Hear what other people sound like, so they'll have these little funny, like, D and T are the same sound, that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you know. But yeah, just I didn't think he was completely deaf. I thought, but yeah. I thought he was pretty, like, his hearing is pretty bad.
Yeah, I've never seen People That Time Forgot, but The Land That Time Forgot, I liked it.
They said People That Time Forgot had Patrick Wayne in it. Yeah. He was the same guy who played Sinbad in Eye of the Tiger.
Okay,
so
all
there
right.
we go.
All right,
it's a small world.
It's that same kind of tone, same
Six
kind
of
movie.
Of
that one I don't think has any stop motion in it, but Land That Time Forgot, I liked it. Evil samurai and Nazis and fucking cavemen, and it's like a Frank Frazetta painting, or they try to get that. It's a Hollow Earth story.
Yeah.
Which, if you understand German science fiction always had Hollow Earths in it, and a lot of the guys who ended up in the Nazi Party had grown up reading German science fiction. A lot of the Nazi Party, a lot of their motifs and a lot of things that they did, they got from science fiction. A lot of people don't realize that. And there's a reason why they did that. And it's because the Communist Party in Russia, a lot of what they did, they got from science fiction. They were getting it from H.G. Wells and what are the other ones, Jenny?
Jules Verne.
Marxist, communist theory and their art and their motif was very Jules Verne and science fiction, you know, what they're doing. So when the Germans do it, they're not going to use foreigners, you know what I mean? They're going to use Germans. So they went use German science fiction.
Louis said Lou Ferrigno did play Sinbad.
He did?
Sinbad of the Seven Seas, 1989. Yeah, we're going to have to see that.
Wonder if it's any good. I'm skeptical of every Sinbad movie I've seen outside of these. I didn't like them. All right. They just weren't right. But if somebody knows a good one, just, you know, drop it in the comment section, you know, later, and I'll try to check it out. I'm skeptical of Sinbad. It's like, I guess like after you grow up seeing that original Clash of the Titans, you can't redo that again, and you just can't recapture that.
Yeah, it's like I saw the remake, and it's like it's not a terrible movie, but it's just kind of like it doesn't have that charm.
You're right.
Of the first one.
Yeah, that original Clash of the Titans was just great.
I mean,
it was
the first
very
one
watchable.
The first one had all this fucking great person. Fucking Laurence Olivier was in it. Burgess Meredith was in it. Yeah. And it was just kind of like there was fucking Pegasus and Medusa. It was fucking awesome.
Yeah, and it has that theatrical tone that like these movies had. You could tell. It wasn't, they weren't trying to, they were trying to take you into a parallel universe. It was not realistic.
Yeah.
And that's what made it great.
Yeah, because it was, like I said, it was transporting you.
Yeah, it's taking you away.
Somewhere else.
It's taking you away from this world and taking you into another one.
Yeah, and I think that's what I always really liked about it.
Yep.
But yeah, that's what these are like, too. It's like all the fucking big rooms full of treasure and like everybody's cool outfits and snake ladies and giant statues coming to life and whatnot.
So, T, I would also recommend, if you like this, I would check out the Jason and the Argonauts. I don't know how many of them there are. There's at least
Which a lot of people think is the best movie that Ray Harryhausen worked on.
Jason and the Argonauts, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that skeleton fight.
I think there might be more than one of those, huh?
I don't remember. I mean, that's mostly everybody just talks about that main one.
Okay.
But I mean, Ray Harryhausen did a fuck ton of movies.
Jason and the Argonauts was like this, except it was Greek. The motif is Greek.
Yeah. It's super cool. I think it was, we just watched that not too long ago.
Yeah.
Probably a couple of years ago.
I thought there was a couple of those, though.
Maybe. But like I said, I don't remember. I remember the first one, like, fondly, but I don't really remember, you know, with the skeleton and the big, like, creaking. One of my favorite things is when that big statue comes to life, and I love the creaking noise that it makes, like, the sound effect. Oh, I wanted to say, too, that I think the first, this first Sinbad movie, the score for it, I think, was done by Bernard Herrmann, the guy that did the Psycho music. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Oh, so Mango just said that Hitler was hiding in the hollow earth. Yeah, that, I forgot what I was talking about, German science fiction. They had a hollow earth theory that went back into the 1800s with a book called Vril, the Coming Power. Sometimes it was translated as Vril, the Coming Race. And they believed in these people living in a hollow earth, that you could, that there was a place near the pole where you could go inside, and then there was another world of, like, the earth was just a hollow shell. That's my understanding of it. And there was
like
another
a Palmer chocolate bunny.
And there's another sun in there and everything, you know. It's just a crazy concept. And and they were using power, they were using this power called Vril. Vril was kind of like the force. But you could make machines that ran on it. And that's why the Germans were, there's all this, that's why some of that stuff you guys are talking about, the Nazi bell legend, or this bell with the blue light coming out of it. A modern explanation is, well, it's a hoax, and they're trying to say that the Germans built a ion propulsion engine. But an alternate explanation is now somebody made up a hoax saying that the Germans had discovered Vril.
Yeah.
That, you know, that Vril was kind of Vril energy was kind of described as light and plasma, you know. So I think maybe there's a chance. That's why I don't believe in the Nazi bell story. I think that it started off as somebody saying that the Nazis had figured out how to make Vril. And with Vril, you can have anti-gravity, and that's where you get all this shit for, like, Nazi flying saucers. Although they did do things like stealth craft, flying wing aircraft. You know, they had that. They had something that was kind of like a flying flapjack. We had one of those, too, which was kind of like a helicopter. But it had propellers on it, like an airplane. But you could take off from almost a standstill with the thing. It had so much wing area. We had a Lockheed Martin plane that did that. It was pretty neat. But, yeah, so that movie that I was talking about, Land That Time Forgot and The People That Time Forgot, was like based on German. It's an English movie, but it's based upon German science fiction. That's why there's Nazis in it.
They did. There was a movie on MST, you know, that came out in the 50s, maybe, like late 50s, The Mole People. That was also based on a Hollow Earth. It's like where they fell in this. They went up to fucking, where the fuck were they? God, I don't even remember where it was. I remember the name of the mountain was Kuitara.
Yeah.
And they fell down into the earth, and that's where, like, all the fucking, there were all these people down there that were, like, super, super pale, and then they were, like, had all the mole people that, like, that were their slaves, like.
Now, when you get on all these hollow earth science fiction movies, including Land of Time Forgotten and everything, and it gets very convoluted and scientifically impossible, just stop thinking. Like, there would not be an up and a down in a situation like that. There wouldn't be a sky or a night or a daytime, you know, but that's happening, obviously. So it doesn't make any sense, you know. And then in one of them, I think at Earth's core, it's just a constant cave system. There isn't an outdoors. Well, no, there is. There's a big cave pocket where it's like outdoors with glowing plants, I think.
Yeah.
It's been a while since I've seen it. Wasn't there big frogs in there?
Yeah,
big,
I think they were like,
or something?
Were they frogs or lizards or something?
Yeah, I haven't seen it in a while. I gotta go back and see it again.
Yeah.
It's enjoyable, but it doesn't make a bit of fucking sense.
Well, like I said, they're just fantasy movies.
Not supposed to, yeah.
Don't ruin it too much by thinking about
it. Yeah, exactly.
Just watch it.
Yeah.
Just enjoy.
Yeah.
The Hard Jaguar says, the creators of Dark, made a new series called 1899 and is set in a ship, looks creepy. I had heard something about that. It's like on Netflix. Yeah, so I'm gonna probably be watching that as well, because I fucking loved Dark.
All right.
It was so good. Yeah, Tila put Clash of the Titans on the list as well. Harry Hamlin looks good in the trailer. Yeah, he made a good Perseus. I just, my favorite part of Clash of the Titans is Calabas.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why. I just love that whole thing with, like, the riddle. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, Perseus going to, like, turn himself invisible and going to figure out what the riddle was and stuff. I love that sequence. And the Medusa sequence, obviously, is fucking awesome as well.
And Hugh Campos says, Iron Sky 2 has Nazis and a Hollow Earth in it.
Yeah.
The best one, though, okay, is the craziest one. And it's, I have it on Blu-ray. And it's got Gary Busey, that's the son, right? Yeah, got Gary Busey in it.
No, his son is Jake Busey.
It's got Jake Busey in it. And it's called Nazis at the Center of the Earth. Nazis at the Center of the Earth is fucking insane. What's the name of that fucking crazy-ass studio that makes it?
It's Asylum, I think.
It's Asylum. Asylum makes the crazy shit, just batshit crazy fucking action movies. But this is actually their best one. And it does closely conform to German... to old German sci-fi concepts. It's got real saucers in it. It's got a Hollow Earth. It's got things kind of like Nazi zombies are in it. It's got... I can't spoil all of it.
Did they do Frankenstein's Army as well?
Frankenstein's Army's a good one,
which was kind of a similar...
Yeah, kind of similar.
...concept.
Yeah.
You need to see Dead Snow. That's a Nazi zombie movie.
Yeah, everybody was saying that, yeah.
It's great. I haven't seen the sequel, but
I want you to add to your playlist. You will laugh your fucking asses off. When me and Jenny saw it for the first time, I didn't know anything about the damn movie, but just as it kept going, and it started off pretty scary, but as it kept going, we just started fucking rolling because it gets more and more ridiculous. But it's like, no, the Nazis were talked about that. Yeah, they were going to do that. You know, everything the Nazis were talking about or all these legends and shit, that's what they eventually show. It's Nazis at the Center of the Earth.
Yeah, it's fun.
It's a fun movie. Yeah.
I mean, one thing in particular, which I won't spoil.
Yeah, can't spoil that shit. But can't spoil
the
that
one
shit.
Thing near the end is like my favorite thing
right.
about the movie that made me laugh the most as soon as it came up. I'm just like, oh, and we're doing this now. All right.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, and everything that they showed, I was going, yeah, they were talking about that. Because
it is very funny.
Yeah, the Nazis could dream. They could dream big, and all of it comes true in this fucking movie.
Yeah, it's pretty hilarious.
Yeah.
All right, so we've been going for an hour, you know that,
okay,
right?
Yeah, it's time to go.
I'm kind of sleepy. Because I kind of slept in this morning, but
yeah.
You know what happened last night? We went to, we went to Mannequins. Just a regular Saturday night or whatever. And so we drank and whatnot. Then we're like, oh, getting kind of hungry. So we're going to go to Chantel's. And then we go and then we sit in Chantel's, but like nobody came and took the order. So it's like, I mean, I know it was like 2 or 3 in the morning, but still. But we were just kind of like, fuck it. I'm sick of waiting. So I said, well, let's stop at McDonald's on the way home. And then we stopped at McDonald's and we go in the drive thru and they said, we're doing cash only.
Yeah, is it cash only okay? And I went, no.
No?
And I left.
Who the fuck's gonna catch? No. What century is this? Nobody has cash? Come on.
Cash only at 3 o'clock in the damn morning.
Yeah, it's like, where the fuck am I supposed to get cash from at this time of night?
I had to make a ham and egg.
So we just came home and made a ham and egg sandwich.
Yeah.
Oh, well. At least we saved some money.
I put it on French bread.
Yeah. It was just of all the weird shit. Like, come on. I'm like, somebody doesn't want us to eat anything. God
Frog
damn
Dog
it.
Says, I'm watching Clash of the Titans right now. I'm really appreciating the filming locations along with the special effects. And full of beautiful people. Yeah, full of beautiful people. That's the way those old movies were, man. Oh, you're beautiful? You can put you in the movies. That's exactly that was the thinking. You paid to see the goddamn movie. Put some pretty people in the fucking movie.
Yeah.
The Chinese said they won't watch fucking American Star Wars or American movies because the people are too ugly. They said that. They pay good money. Why are they putting these ugly people in the fucking movie?
We didn't pay $10 to sit here and look at a bunch of ugly white people.
Yeah. Fucking, they know what a good looking people look like. And then they're like, well, this isn't good looking white people. Who's this dude with a beard? Who's this old man with a beard? Luke what? Get that. I don't know who Mark Hamill is. He's ugly. That's not what they paid. They didn't pay for that shit. They were fucking brutal. And then they had, Finn. What's that guy? Who's the actor for Finn, the black guy? The British actor.
Boyega?
Yeah, John Boyega. John Boyega in the American poster. He was fucking big as everybody else. For the Chinese poster, they shrunk his ass down to like the size of a dime.
Yeah.
They didn't want black people on the poster. Yeah, and yeah, that's right. And Disney went along with that shit. Yeah.
Well, they just want the money, man.
Yeah, and then they're thanking the provinces, the same provinces for Mulan, the ones that had the damn concentration camps. Concentration camps and shrinking black people. That's fucking Disney right there. Don't believe anything they fucking say. Don't believe anything those people say. Those corporations don't give a shit about you.
Well, no, they just want money.
It's about money.
Yep. That's the way it's always been.
Yep.
Mango said, yeah, Clash looks great on Blu-ray. Yeah, it's just... Yeah. I mean, like I said, I've seen it a million times. So it's like, I never know how somebody that's never seen it is going to react to it because, you know, I grew up with it and I loved it from a kid. But I don't know. Like, I just think there's something about it that the remake just didn't really capture. Like you said, I think the remake, they try too hard, like with the CGI and stuff, to make everything look quote unquote realistic. And I just don't think... I don't know. I just don't think that's the way to go.
Yeah.
Because they try to make shit realistic, but to me, CGI never looks realistic. So it's just kind of like a...
Another problem with these old classic movies is that I've recommended... Okay, like, here's a good example. I recommended Conan 1 to Xanada, but he looked at some shitty-ass fucking transfer, probably off of VHS or something. He goes, boy, it looks terrible. There's a big difference in the quality of what you saw in a theater and then what you got on VHS and what you saw on CRT television and bad. If you get the Blu-ray editions of these or the HD editions, they're usually remastered. And they look like they were supposed to look, and sometimes even better than they looked in the movies. Like, for instance, there's a big difference between Blu-ray Flash Gordon, the De Laurentiis Flash Gordon, and what you saw on VHS. Big difference.
Well, yeah, everything looked like crap on VHS.
It looked like crap on VHS, but on Blu-ray, it looked gorgeous.
Now that everything's being, like, remastered and fixed up and everything, you can see, you know, that it actually did look good. It's like you just thought it looked cheap and shitty because you watched it on VHS.
Yeah, on VHS, they look like cheap and shitty costumes. When you see it on Blu-ray and a big television, you see all the fine weaves and the real... expensive materials that they used, and the colors look so much better, and the aspect ratio looks so much better. Fucking Flash Gordon is an acid trip. It's an acid trip to see that shit in HD on a good TV. I love that movie.
Yep.
But okay. You want to shut it down, Jenny? You sound like you're running out of steam.
Yeah, I am. Just, I'm getting real sleepy. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like I said, I slept in, but. Right around this time, I'm starting to get sleepy. I probably need some coffee or something.
Seeing Clash of Titans on Blu-ray might be a good idea, or at least renting a fucking HD version of it, a remastered version.
Yeah. Well, we can, I mean, you know, like I said, we're going to watch Eye of the Tiger tonight.
Yeah.
And then we have to watch, we're going to watch Young Frankenstein, because that's the movie that won in the poll. So that's the one's going up Thursday/Friday, which I'm very excited about, because I fucking love Young Frankenstein. And I was so excited to see that Hulu had added it. So that's the next one we're going to do. So we're going to watch those. If we start early, I guess we could watch Clash of the Titans too and talk about that shit also. But, you know, whatever.
Okay.
We'll see. I guess we'll do a whole Ray Harryhausen palooza. Yeah. Like over the next few days.
I want to go back to fucking At Earth's Core and fucking Land of Time Forgotten, People of Time Forgotten. I want to see those two.
Okay.
Yeah. I want to see them all again.
Yeah. All right. So we will see you guys tomorrow. At 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Like I said, we'll be talking about Eye of the Tiger, maybe some other shit as well. So have a good rest of your weekend, and we'll see you guys tomorrow.